Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. My name's Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is Jeff Huang, talking about his entry-level Pot Limit Omaha book. We'll be talking to Jeff in a few minutes. For those of you who missed the announcement, tonight is the last night Gambling with an Edge will be heard on this particular radio station on Thursday evenings, beginning next Tuesday, April 21st, from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific time. We'll be heard on Vegas AllNet Radio. Those of you who get the podcast will find the shows 2 days earlier in the week, and perhaps some of our guests will be sleepier at 10 a.m. than they are at 7 p.m., especially the poker players. Otherwise, we don't expect much difference. Jeopardy has been in the news, and poker players. Richard, what's this story about?
Yeah, so there's a guy who I guess tonight is his fifth night, who's just been crushing it. Former professional poker player. Now I think he's a currency trader in Chicago. But he's using this strategy of, you know, picking the high numbers first, jumping all over the board because he says it, you know, confuses his opponents to not, you know, stay in the same category all the time. Basically going all in on the daily doubles. I'm wondering, and you didn't take that approach when you were on Jeopardy, right?
I didn't, and I have some Jeopardy stories to share when our guest doesn't show up and we're struggling
we're
to fill time. Tonight we have more than enough to talk about, so my Jeopardy stories are going to wait.
Anyway, I'm just happy to see, you know, game players like Advantage players doing well on shows like that.
Yeah. All right, now there have been asset forfeitures along Highway I-80, among other places. At least now we're safe so long as we're traveling in New Mexico.
And I-40, right?
On I-40.
Yeah.
So what happened here, Richard?
So just this week, New Mexico governor signed into law stopping the asset forfeitures unless someone is actually convicted of a crime. So you still have to get through Arizona on I-40, but once you get to New Mexico, you're in better shape.
So you think Arizona and Oklahoma near the border of New Mexico will gang up because they'll feel people are relaxed and so...
Yeah, I don't know, but I will say this, just a tip for our listeners. Whenever I travel and rent a car, I insist that they give me a car with plates for the state that I'm in. So... you don't want to have out-of-state plates when you're traveling through, well, Arizona more than anywhere else, but almost anywhere. It's better to have in-state plates.
So when you're in Hertz, and when you change states, do you go to the nearest Hertz and get them to change plates?
Well, no. Usually I'm traveling within the same state. So
Okay. So let's talk to our guest. Jeff Huang is an expert blackjack player and a former semi-pro poker player. Recently, he started a game development company called High Variance Games. He has a top-rated entry-level Pot Limit Omaha book called, surprisingly, Pot Limit Omaha, The Big Strategy, which we'll be talking about tonight. He also has 3 volumes on advanced Pot Limit Omaha. Jeff Huang, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you.
Your book basically presumes the reader has some familiarity with Texas Hold'em. Limiting yourself to 5 minutes or less, how is Omaha similar to and how is it different from Texas Hold'em?
So if you've never played Omaha before, Omaha is basically Hold'em, except you get 4 cards instead of 2. And at Showdown, your hand is the best five-card hand you can make using two cards from your hand and three cards from the board. So you have to use two cards from your hand, and you can't play the board. Some of the big differences are, for starters, hands run bigger. So straights and flushes, they don't happen very often in Hold'em or Stud, but they happen all the time in PLO. And so if you have a board with a straight or possible flush on it, and you have five people in the pot, there's a good chance that somebody has a straight or a flush. The draws run bigger. So in Hold'em and in virtually every other form of poker, the biggest straight draw is an eight-card straight draw. In Hold'em, that would be an open-ended straight draw or a double gut shot. In Omaha, we have 13, 17, and 20-card straight draws. And a 20-card straight draw hits 70% of the time, so it can actually be a favorite to hit. Draws can be a favorite even over a set. So if you have like a 20-card straight draw with a flush draw, you can be a favorite over a set, or even a 16-card straight draw with a flush draw. Also, starting hand values also run closer together. So in Hold'em, everybody knows that a bigger pair is a 4-to-1 favorite over a smaller pair. In PLO or any other form of Omaha, the hand values run closer together, such that it's rare to have a reasonable hand matchup where one hand is much as a 2-to-1 favorite over any other. That's if you're all in before the flop. Another situation where they're different is that if you flop the nuts and hold them, you're pretty much never folding. So if you flop a straight, it's very rare that you would fold that unless there's, you know, an extraordinary circumstance. Like there's $1 million on the table and you put 100 raises go in and there's a flush draw on the board. You basically never fold a straight otherwise. In PLO, it's correct to fold another straight sometimes if the stacks are deep enough. So if the board is 9-8-7 with two diamonds, there's a pot-sized bet and a pot-sized raise in front of you, and all you have is Jack-10 with no flush draw, a lot of times you're going to be folding that hand. In pot limit Omaha high-low, sometimes you fold the nut low on the flop, or even if you have a nut straight, but there's a possible low, the best you can do is split the pot, and you're probably going to fold that, you know, sometimes even for one bet. So those are the main differences.
Okay, good. Let's compare bankrolls. Assume that you're a good player, and so I'm assuming, say, 1, 2, 5, 10. You tell me what would be good comparisons, but what kind of bankroll would you need for Texas Limit Hold'em, No Limit Texas Hold'em, and Pot Limit Omaha?
Well, so let's say you're talking about like 5-10 limit Hold'em. That's small stakes, low limit Hold'em. You probably don't need more than like 3 or 4 grand to play that game. So that's real small stakes. That's the level above 3-6 low limit Hold'em. And no limit Hold'em, you have the 1-2 or 1-3. That's pretty much the entry level no limit Hold'em games. But the next level is 2-5, and so it's a big low limit game or a small mid stakes game. In a 2-5 no limit Hold'em game, you need probably, you sit down with 100 big blinds. So a 2-5 game, you sit down with $500, and you probably need at least 20 to 30 buy-ins. So you need at least a 10 to 15K bankroll, if not more. Pot limit Omaha, for the same blind levels, you need significantly more. So for a 2-5 PLO game, you need at a minimum 25 to 40K. That's if the stack sizes are under $1,000. If you're playing in a game where the stack size is more like, the average stack is more like $1,500, the straddle is going to be all every other hand, so it'd be a 2-5-10 game and not a 2-5 game. And the thing that happens in limit Hold'em, if somebody puts a straddle out, it's dead money. In pot limit Omaha, if somebody puts out a straddle, they're changing the size of the game. So now the pot's bigger and the bets are bigger. And what happens in Omaha is that the game size is tailored towards the size of the stacks rather than the blinds. So, and then you get into games like the game that I started on, I cut my teeth on, a 5-5 game in St. Louis, where the average stack was like 4 grand. There was like 30, 40K on the table. There'd be at least one or two guys with a 10K stack, a couple of guys with 4 or 5 grand, and a few guys with 2K. And in a game like that, the straddle is out of every hand. There'd be 40, 50 to go pre-flop. Sometimes it'd be 150 to 200 just because. For that kind of game, you need more like 60 to 75 grand.
Just because.
So, I remember 10 years ago, I knew a lot of poker players who were switching over to Omaha because they thought the players were so much worse, that the win rates in Omaha were so much better compared to Hold'em, just because the players played so badly. Is that still true? And what, like, if you had an equivalent, whatever the equivalent to a 2-5 hold'em, no limit hold'em game, what would the equivalent size pot limit Omaha game be, and what are the win rates like comparatively in those two games?
So the closest comparison to a 2-5 no limit hold'em game would be the 1-3 game I started at Aria a few years ago. It's 1-3 blinds. You call for $3. It's 200 min buy-in, 500 max buy-in. There's no straddle, so it keeps controls the size of the game. As for the closest comparable, and I would say the win rates at that game would probably be better than you get at 2-5 no limit hold'em.
Okay, and do you have an idea what those win rates would be for a competent player?
I probably couldn't guess.
Huh. Now, you mentioned also, off the air about you've started games. How do you start a game, and how does that work?
Well, so what happened was about 7 or 8 years ago, there were no small stakes PLO games in America, period. Pot Limit Omaha was all predominantly mid to high stakes, nosebleed games. So we talked about the size of a 2-5 PLO game. A lot of these games were 5-10 and a quarter or 25-50, 100 in the Midwest and South. So these games were significantly bigger than anything else in the room. One of the things that happened in St. Louis is that my friends and I, we started these small stakes games. I'd played in this game in Oklahoma. They had a 1-2 blind, $5 bring-in. I said, this is great. Let's put a 500 max buy-in on it. So this is what we started in St. Louis. It was 1-2, 5 bring-in, 200 min, 500 max buy-in. That was at the end of 2007, right when my book came out. That game has run every day pretty much since, and is the longest running small stakes PLO game in the country.
So now, how did you just go to the card room manager and say, we want to play Pot Limit Omaha for these stakes? And he said, okay.
Yeah, I mean, like, we were already playing there. We had a game, so we decided, these are the rules we wanted to play with, and people just started playing.
Huh. And are card rooms usually open to that kind of thing?
If you have a full table and all you need is a dealer, it's an interesting story. So I moved to Las Vegas after the World Series in 2008. That was the following summer. We tried to get there was no PLO in Las Vegas at the time, so we tried to play a 5-5 game at the Wynn. I played mostly shorthanded for about a month before it died out. We tried to play at Caesars. At the time, it was Caesars Palace, all no limit all the time. We had 7 people. And they wouldn't deal the game to us. At the Wynn, if we had 2 people and they had a dealer, they would deal the game to us. So we needed a full table at Caesar's Palace before they would deal the game to us. That was 2007 or 2008. So later that fall, Poker Pro installed their Poker Pro electronic tables, or Poker Tech is a company, installed the Poker Pro electronic tables at Excalibur, and they wanted me to come down and host a small stakes PLO game. It was at 50 cent, $1, 100 min, 200 max buy-in. And this was ran every Thursday until after the World Series when they closed down the electronic tables at the room. So that summer, I went to the Venetian, had a copy of my new book, it's Advanced Pot Limit Omaha Volume 1, and there's a chapter in that book talking about small structuring for small stakes games. And in that chapter is the 1-2 blind, $5 bring-in, 200 min, 500 max buy-in, no straddle. I said I can bring. I have all these people that I've already played with. I will come here. I set this game up. I'll promote it. If you will do this game for us, and they said okay. And so from the summer of 2009 or 2008, I started playing this game every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then after a few months, I started running every single day. And so that was the longest running small stakes game in Las Vegas until 2011. I went to Aria with a friend of mine, TT. You might know from the 2+2 forums. He works for Poker Tracker now. But we went there and we said we can set up this game, promote it.
Now, why did you want to move from the Venetian to Aria?
I just try to spread the game around, and I had another structure I had in mind. Which they did not want at the Venetian because what I was told was they can market the 1-2 as a small stakes game, and I wanted to have a 1-3 game. So we went to the Aria, and this was 1-3. There's no $5 branches. You can call for $3, 200 min, 500 max buy-in, no straddle. This is like May 2011 or so, and they were struggling to get a 1-2 game going. And I said, let's implement the structure. We agreed on the structure. So we're going to go promote it. I went to go eat. 2 hours later, they just had this list, and all of a sudden the game's running. And this game at Aria has run every day since May 2011 or so.
So the game is everywhere. The game is For small stakes PLO, you can find this game everywhere.
So, and this is what's happened. So in this time period, small stakes PLO games have started popping up in every state that has poker, pretty much every state that has poker. And most of these games are copies of the games I started here, either the 1-2 to 5 with the $5 bring-in or the 1-3.
All right, let's go back to your book. You call what's called a big play strategy, which basically means that if you enter a pot voluntarily before the flop, you should be ready to risk your entire stack should you get the right flop. Do most successful players use something similar to a big play strategy?
So, generally speaking, in big bet forms of poker, any pot limit or no limit game, the general goal is to play for stacks, ultimately. It's a little more extreme in pot limit Omaha, where the game sizes are tailored to the stack sizes. So the bigger the stacks, the bigger the action pre-flop. And so you have to be prepared pretty much when you play to stick your money in. Generally speaking, as a manner of speaking, everybody who tries to play the game is playing to play for stacks. In that manner of speaking, yes, everybody does use a big play strategy in some form of speaking, I guess. But basically what the big play strategy is it's really a basic strategy for full ring PLO. It's not necessarily a specialized strategy. It's just more of a basic strategy.
Okay. Now, at one point you credit Bob Schifoni with the concept that if somebody bets Pot Limit Omaha like he has something, generally speaking, you should believe him. Now, I'm sure there must be exceptions, but this seems to say that players don't bluff in Pot Limit Omaha, which can't be true. So what am I misunderstanding here?
So as a general rule, this goes for all forms of poker. The more players in the pot, the less poker you play. So if there are five or six people in the pot, it's less likely if somebody bets that they're bluffing. Now, this is taken to another level in PLO, because if you have five people in the pot, there's a flush or a straight possible. It's very likely that somebody has it. So if somebody leads out of the blinds in a five people and the flop is 9-8-7, it'd be pretty stupid actually to bet without the nut straight, because it's very very easy for somebody else to have it. So in that context, if somebody bets at the pot on a board like that, you have to believe them.
But there have to be ideas where Pot Limit Omaha players bluff.
Yes. So in full ring play, when pots are multi-way, there are a few situations. It turns out there are actually two kinds of flops or two kinds of hands in Omaha. There are multi-way pots, which is what you get when you play full ring and five or six people end up a flop every time. And there's shorthanded pots, which happens when you play online, and there are a lot of six max games online. It also happens sometimes when you play full ring. So when the pot's contested is short-handed or heads up, the first bet is always suspect. So if somebody opens with a raise and you're on the button and you call and both blinds fold, you're heads up. All right. So every starting hand in Omaha is a drawing hand. You don't start with a made hand. Even a pair of aces doesn't constitute a made hand in Omaha. So
being dealt four aces is just a pair of aces.
It's actually worse than that, because that's all you can make with four aces.
You can't catch a trip. So
you can't catch a trip, and you can't get a flush.
Right.
So you're being
straight. Screwed.
So what happens is every hand is a dog to hit the flop hard. So if somebody opens with a raise in early position and hold him, he usually has a really strong hand or something like a suited connector. In Omaha, it doesn't matter what he has. He's always a dog to hit the flop. Like the only hands that are really strong, that are pretty much a favorite to hit the flop hard, are something like ace, king, king, double suited, which will flop either top set or the not flush draw about half the time. Everything else is a dog. It's less likely to hit the flop than less likely than not, or less likely to hit than actually hit. So this actually gets to the advanced book. And this is the crux of the advanced book, is the shorthanded situations. If somebody opens with a raise and you're in a shorthanded pot, the first bet often doesn't mean anything, because he's less likely, he'll bet 75-80% of the time, but he's a dog to hit it every time, which means that you should call him frequently. And if that player is the type of player who will check and give up on the turn, and this is called floating, you should call him more frequently on the flop. If he's more likely to bet again on the turn, you should call him less often, or with stronger or stronger, or at least marginal draws.
Okay.
I wanted to ask about, you'd made a comment to me that that limit Omaha, you can basically play with your eyes closed. And this, I think, is tremendously appealing to blackjack and video poker players who, you know, the problem that blackjack and video poker players often have in moving over to poker is they're used to a basic strategy where you know the right play and the wrong play. And when they move over into poker, everything is a maybe. But in limit Omaha, it sounds like this could come close to having a basic strategy that someone could just follow.
Well, it's an interesting point about basic strategy in general. It's a misconception, actually, that there's no basic strategy in poker. And actually, Arnold Snyder, he's actually written books on poker, made the same comment in his big book of Blackjack that there's no basic strategy in poker, although his book about the poker tournament floor, it is a basic strategy.
I see what you mean.
So basic strategy, there's a lot of definitions about this in Blackjack, but basic strategy is basically just yields the best play on average, given no additional information. If you're counting cards, for example, you know that the count changes and then the play should change. And that's exploitative strategy. In poker, it's similar. You have a baseline play for every situation, and then you adjust to your opponent. So if you raise before the flop from the button, one of the blinds calls, and he checks on the flop, you're going to bet probably 75-80% of the time. Now, if he's the kind of player that will check and fold every single time, then you're going to bet 100% of the time. Unless you have the stone cold nuts and you want to get more action, and he's not going to call otherwise. But if he's the kind of player who will check raise you, and he's tricky, it makes your bet more risky. So you, against that player, you'll adjust your play and check back more often. So you're adjusting your play to the opponent the same way that you adjust your play in blackjack to the count.
Right, but
now back
but
to Limit
back
Omaha.
To my question was: is Limit Hold'em the type of game that
Limit Omaha?
I mean, Limit Omaha the type of game that, say, you had somebody that, you know, you were going to teach from scratch and you wanted to give them a basic strategy and say, go play this way and you will beat the game.
Yes.
Sounds like Limit Omaha would be an ideal game for that. Or actually, I think Sklansky used to say that his best game was seven-card high-low split because it was the most mathematical.
And seven-card stud high-low is actually similar to Omaha high-low. So for me, Omaha is easier, and actually, I could take you guys right now. We can go beat Omaha High Low somewhere. All you have to do is just wait for ace twos, and only bet the nut, you know, wait for the nut low draw or some other. We can talk about this later, but it's actually really easy.
You're talking about Limit High Low or
limit high low.
No Limit. Pot Limit High Low.
Limit Omaha High Low.
Limit High Low. Okay.
We can go to Orleans right now, and you guys can beat this game
just by only playing ace twos and
pretty much.
I mean, wow.
It might be boring, but you could do it.
Wow. You know, I can hear the gears turning on a lot of our listeners right now, you know, heading to the Orleans.
Damn, I invited him for a free buffet tonight. We're wasting time. We could be at the Orleans
getting rich.
Okay, now, in addition to the book we've been talking about tonight, you have three books on the game called Advanced Pot Limit Omaha Volume 1, and then Volume 2, and then Volume 3. Do you foresee a Volume 4 and 5 coming?
At one point in time, I might have envisioned doing something, either a tournament book or something on Pot Limit Omaha High Low, or what's called Big O, which is Pot Limit Omaha High Low with five cards. I was never really much of a tournament player, so that would be a long shot at this stage. And also, the market for books in general has kind of died out with poker. So,
not just poker.
Yeah, we can have a long discussion about that.
So are you, the World Series is coming up. Are you playing in the World Series or no?
Yeah, I don't really play that much anymore. But the one thing I don't miss is a series. I've always been a cash game player. And there was a time where I showed up for the World Series and the structure's really bad. Probably 7-8 years ago, it used to be, like, you sit down with like 60 big blinds, which is nothing. In PLO, you need at least like 150 big blinds to play that game. So this is a tournament. You get 60 big blinds and you're out. So I actually didn't play the series. I just played cash games for that time. Now the structure's a little bit better. So I'll probably play a few events for kicks. I usually play the 1500 limit 08. maybe the 2500 or 3K. Also the pot limit Omaha and pot limit Omaha low.
Okay, now heads up, limit hold'em is essentially a solve game. There's computer programs that can, they say, if you're really great, you might tie it, but over time, you're not going to beat it. Now, other forms of hold'em, they're working on computer adaptations of it. Compared to hold'em, is pot limit Omaha easier or more difficult to solve with a computer?
I would say probably infinitely more difficult. One of the things about hold'em is that there's only 169 starting hands. In Omaha, there's 5,277 distinct starting hands. So just from that standpoint, it'd be a lot more difficult for a computer to solve. And the other thing is, I don't think you need a computer to solve the game. It's easier for a mind like mine. If you understand it qualitatively, and you understand the structure of the game, it's actually a lot simpler than hold'em. And that's the kind of thing about Omaha. Like hold'em, you have to be able to, soul read a little bit. In Omaha, the information, it's a hand valuation game, largely, and the information's right in front of you. So it's like a little bit like blackjack in that sense. You know what the best play is at all times, for the most part. At least until you get shorthanded, and then you have a lot more marginal situations.
So it is more mathematical than reading your opponents.
Yeah, it's more mathematical. So but as far as a computer solving it, a lot more difficult. As far as a human just trying to understand it qualitatively, it's a lot simpler in my mind.
Now, if you wanted to invest in a good pot limit Omaha computer program to help you develop, are there good ones on the market? And if so, which ones would you recommend?
There aren't any that I know of. I used the Wilson Turbo Omaha High software in my first book. It had a few stats that I was interested in, particularly the one where it shows how often you're going to flop a flush draw and how often you're going to flop a set. So I used a few key pieces of data from that. But that was a limit Omaha High piece of software, and I don't necessarily recommend. You don't necessarily need it, and I'm not sure there's anything out there that you would necessarily need for PLO.
Are you familiar with? Have you checked the online games here in Nevada, the legal online WSOP and Real Gaming, and do they deal pot limit Omaha online here?
I'm pretty sure they do on WSOP. I haven't checked it in a while. I played a little bit on it was the Ultimate Gaming. I played a little bit, and they shut down. I haven't got my money on WSOP yet.
No.
Okay. Now, your book was published 7 or 8 years ago. Is the game the same today as it was then? I guess it means that if so, your four books have had no impact whatsoever. So is the game the same, and are there other must-read Pot Limit Omaha books that have come out in the last 7 or 8 years?
So the biggest change in the last 7 or 8 years, as I mentioned, is that small stakes PLO didn't exist back then. It was all mid to high stakes. Now you can play pretty much in every state in the country. The other thing that happened is that those big nosebleed stakes games, we talked about how big a 2-5 PLO game can get. Back in the day, in the Midwest and the South, there was 5-10 and a quarter, 25-50, 100. Games are so much bigger than everything else in the casino. Those games don't really run anymore. But at the same time, pot limit in Omaha in general is a lot more popular than it was. So from that standpoint, that's changed. As far as game conditions, games are a bit tougher now. And one of the things that happens is when you read the first chapter of my first book is you learn how not to blow off your stacks with marginal hands on the flop. And you figure out what the hand valuations are. So that happens less often. Seven or 8 years ago, it was absurd how easy these games were and how easily people would just stick their money in with the bare nut straight or middle or bottom set or two pair non-nut flush draws. But once you figure those out, people stop doing that, and it happens less often. So games are a little bit tougher now.
Yeah, I think that's why everybody that I knew a lot of people who had switched over to Omaha back 10 years ago because of exactly that. They said that the level of play was ridiculously bad. So if you had somebody that, wanted to take up poker, you think Omaha's a better, faster track to winning play than
It's a complicated question because you need to understand or you need to at least have played No Limit Hold'em in order to play Omaha. I do think the PLO games are easier than the No Limit Hold'em games right now. Which isn't to say that, you know, Hold'em players are better than PLO players. I think the best PLO players are probably better than the best Hold'em players, although a lot of them play both games. And certainly, if you try to put a good No Limit Hold'em player who hasn't played PLO into a PLO game, he would get crushed. If you put a good PLO player into a Hold'em game, you probably might not do great, but you would do a lot better than the Hold'em player would do in the other game.
Hmm.
But if either one were on the top, they could pick up the other game rather quickly. If you're smart enough, if you're smart enough to get good at world class at one poker game, you're smart enough to get world class at any other poker game.
Certainly, it does require a different mindset.
Okay, now, one of the books in yours that you recommended was Bob Schifrioni's book. I think I said that wrong, and that came out like 30 years ago. Is that still relevant today?
So, my opinion, if you're studying any game, particularly a game, a form of poker like Omaha, where there's such little material, you need to read pretty much everything that's out there. It's just due diligence, and pretty much when you're studying games or companies or stocks, you gotta do your homework. I'm also a little bit of a history buff, and that was the Bob Schifrioni's book was the original book on Omaha. So if you want to understand where the basis of my strategies come from, you have to understand. You probably should read that book. If you don't care, maybe don't read it. But it's a good read. It's easy to read. And if you like poker, you probably should read it.
I remember getting that book when it came out.
Uh-huh.
So,
do you have any memory of what it said?
Not much. I just remember because I knew Bob from – he was a backgammon and chess player.
Yes, he was.
Back then, so –
All right, yeah. Now, Pot Limit Omaha is much more exciting than Texas Hold'em. You play more hands, the pots get bigger. But for televised poker, Texas Hold'em leads by a mile. Do you have any thoughts on why this is?
Well, two reasons. No Limit Hold'em has a huge competitive advantage from the standpoint that it's easier to pick up. Anybody can figure out, how to play the game. It takes a minute to learn, a lifetime to master. So it's easy to pick up. Also, No Limit Hold'em tournaments make for better TV. Pot Limit Omaha is a better cash game than a tournament game. And so what would have to happen is someone would have to televise a PLO cash game. They did this probably 4 years ago on Poker After Dark. They played a six-handed PLO cash game with Tom Dwan, Patrick Antonius, and Phil Ivey, and a few other guys.
Pretty decent players.
Pretty decent players. It was fantastic TV, I thought, as an Omaha player.
I missed that episode. Actually, I'd love to see that.
It's probably on YouTube.
Yeah. But we do need more of that. And what's happening now is, poker on TV has kind of died down a little bit, but they're still just Hold'em all the time. And the fact is that, 30 years ago, still was pretty popular. And before that, draw was the game. Right now, it's Hold'em, but at some point, it's going to be Omaha, and people need to be forward-thinking if they don't, they want to show poker, and they don't want poker to die.
Now, you said PLO is a better cash game than a tournament game. Why is that?
A lot of it has to do with the pre-flop play. It's not very well balanced. So Pot Limit Omaha High-Low is actually a much better tournament game than PLO High, and it's probably a little more advanced than anything we discussed so far. But what happens is if somebody opens with a raise and you're in the blinds and you're playing PLO high, there's nothing you can do about it. There's no counterplay because of the way hand valuations run. In PLO PLO 8, which is the high-low form, you can wait for an ace deuce or an ace three. You can call it and then shove the flop, or you can 3-bet. And these are things you can do in Hold'em that you can't do in PLO. You can't just discriminately 3-bet from the blinds because the guy who raises from late position can just call you with whatever he has.
Because the difference in the values of the hands are much closer in PLO right. Versus Hold'em.
Like if I open a raise, if I open him with a raise from the button, and the blind 3-bets, I've never folded in that situation in my entire life. I've called every single time. I mean, it's just the way the game is.
Yeah.
All right. You've written articles for the Motley Flu. Motley Fool, which is an investment newsletter. One article that would be of interest to our readers is called The Death of Blackjack and What Games Are Replacing It. Now, tonight we don't actually have time to discuss that article, but it can be found on your website, jeffhuang.com, where Huang is spelled H-W-A-N-G. What else can people find on your website?
On that website, you will find links to pretty much all my work, links to my books, links to my Motley Fool gaming commentary, which goes back over a decade. I've written probably a couple hundred articles on the gaming industry. You can find a link to the Card Player website. I used to write a bit for Card Player magazine. A lot of that stuff is behind a paywall now, so you can't read most of it. And you'll also find links to articles I've written on baseball cards, among other things.
Baseball cards,
yes.
Did you say?
Uh-huh.
So are you still collecting baseball cards?
No, so 20 years ago, I quit like everybody else my age. And then I had some free time. I was actually collecting guitar pedals. I started like a blues band. It's probably 2 years ago. And
did you say guitar pedals?
Guitar pedals. So I found a little hole in the market. You know, there's these modern guitar pedals. There's a limited edition, and there's a little hole in the market. And
tell Richard what a guitar pedal is, and he'll tell me.
Yeah. Well, so basically, you plug your guitar into this pedal. And then you plug the pedal into the amp, and it makes sound. So if you hear
a wah-wah pedal.
Yeah, well, there's all kinds. There's wah-wah, there's the overdrives, all kinds of overdrives. There's delays, and all kinds of things. So, but there's this market, and there's brand new pedals, and I figured I could corner the market because there's such a small quantity, and all of a sudden I was making money on this. And I got to thinking about all the cards I used to collect as a baseball cards I used to collect as a kid. And I figured out the modern cards are serialized, they're autographed, and you can corner the market on these. And actually, I wrote a book on this called The Modern Baseball Card Investor, and that's available on Amazon as well.
So you can corner the market and basically drive up the price on these cards?
As long as there's a market for that player of that card.
Huh.
All right. Now, when we introduced you, we said that your current life, you are a game inventor or game developer, and you have a company called High Variance Game. Now, we're not going to talk a lot about that tonight. We hope to have you on again soon, talking more about your game development. But in general, what is High Variance Games all about?
Excuse me. So basically, I started this company to develop casino games for the table games pit and also the slot floor. I invented a game called Super Blackjack. I don't know how much I can talk about that. We're actually trying to get some work done on the site.
Talk about what you talk about,
well,
and don't
actually,
talk about what you can't.
Actually, Richard asked this.
Well, yeah. So okay. I think something that that our listeners would really be interested in is this class that's being offered at UNLV that you took. And why don't you tell us about this? It's basically a game invention class, right?
Yeah. So I did my MBA, my master's in hotel at administration at UNLV. My concentration is in gaming, but they only let you take two classes. So in gaming. So this class came on after I graduated, and if we had it, back then it would be the greatest thing ever. So they started this class 2 years ago by Mark Osloff, who used to be the CEO of Shuffle Master. Uh-huh. back when they were like a three product company. And then now they dominate pretty much the proprietary table games business and also the shuffler business. He retired in 2009, started this class to teach kids how to develop games and get them to the market. So 2 years ago was the first time they offered this class. There were 17 students in the class. 11 of them wound up with patentable games. So this class comes with Mark Osloff. It comes with the lawyer, who's Mark Littman. He's actually written more gaming patents than anybody else. So you get this patent, you get the initial filing.
The
school pays for this.
Yeah, so they pay for all the patent work, and what do they get? They get a piece of the game, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure I can tell you how much, but they do get a piece of the game. So
wait, that's got to be in the course materials. It's got to tell you how much they get of your game.
It's actually after you sign up for the class, you sign a waiver. So,
oh, okay.
So this first year, this girl, she's 20 years old, not even old enough to gamble. She had developed a game, a domino, like a Pico Tiles slot machine. Sold it to Konami. I'm not sure how much I probably can't say the amount, but it was a lot. It was a good Wall Street salary, let's say.
Wow.
She's 20 years old, not even old enough to gamble. So I decided to take this class for kicks. You know, I didn't have any particular visions of you know, what I would do.
Were you after the Wall Street salary or the 20-year-old girls?
You know, it's funny. I wouldn't expect that class to have a bunch of young girls in it. You know, I mean.
Well, so the first time, I think it was just mostly college age kids.
Sure.
But they opened. So the second year, this is when I did this. This was last fall. They opened it up to people in the community, grad students, former grad students like myself, and other people just in the community. So we had 25 people. I think 17 of us had patentable games. And at the end of the semester, 7 of us got to present our games to a panel of judges from, you know, Caesars, MGM, and the Cosmopolitan. So we got pretty good exposure out of that, and I got to present my game. So they have seen this, and they are interested. So we'll see what happens from here.
Yeah.
Good. I want to hear more about that when you
now,
can
Now, I'm sure you
talk
can't
about
talk
that.
About this, but did you, of course, build a backdoor into the game so that it's beatable, but only by sharp players?
Yeah, no.
Well, we'll see about that.
he probably doesn't. He was going to sell his game to a manufacturer, and it's the programmer who works for Shuffle Master that you have to bribe.
No, not if it's a table game, right? I mean, he has both games. He has both table games and
Shuffle
machine
Master
type
has
games,
the shuffling
right?
machines. So technically, I mean, if you were probably something totally
are
legal.
Are you kidding? I would love to interview a guy who writes the programs for the shuffle machines. If you're out there listening, I'm easy to find.
All right. So we got a couple more questions for Jeff Wang. And right now is a good break for some commercials. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. On Sundays, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, there's a $500,000 swipe, spin, and win promotion. That is, play 300 points, go to a kiosk, and spin a virtual wheel. Prizes at the top end are $50 free play, $25 free play, $25 resort credit. Bottom end, 2,500 points, worth $750, free breakfast buffet, or a mystery gift. So far, in the 2 weeks it's run so far, I've had 20 spins, and our prize is a little over between $20 and $25 average, counting restaurants at face value and counting the mystery gift as zero. It has been a little Tupperware gift, and now it's a knife. And I think when they run out of knives, they're going to pizza stones. But it's a random draw. Every player has an equal chance at all the prizes. It's like the $50 free play is, if it's 5% for the regular players, it's 5% for the guy who just walks in. So no more video poker classes this year. This spring. We'll be starting again in the fall. At the Palms, weekly 7 p.m. drawings on Friday. Winner share $10,000. Top prize, $3,000. Don't need to be there, but you need to collect before midnight or your prize disappears. They have multiple drawing entry periods. Friday afternoon, 4 to 6:30 is double. Friday evenings, 8 to midnight is 5 times. Play for prizes, PFP. Through April 24th, the prizes are going to be Lowe's gift cards. You can get up to $185 a day in Lowe's gift cards. Or $5 for coffee bean, which is, they have some coffee beans in that casino, but the gift cards can be used anywhere. Redeemed at a rate of 0.20%, you keep your points. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month, $79.95 a year, allows you to get corrections on most of these games. It's a good place to practice quick quads, for example. The game of the week, 100 play with Super Times Pay. Super Times Pay is a 6-coin per line game where approximately 1 hand in 15 gets you a multiplier between 2x and 10x. No change in strategy is needed. The Super Times Pay feature adds about 0.25% to whatever the game was worth to start with. All right.
So I just want to jump in here. We had a question from a listener. We always like our listener questions. They want to know, once we move to Vegas All Net Radio, where the episodes will be archived. So wherever you're getting the show right now, whether it's iTunes or bobdancer.com or YouTube, it'll be in the same place you're getting it now. The only thing that will change is if you listen to the show live. So if you listen to the show live, it'll be on Tuesdays from 10 to 11 at VegasAllNetRadio.com. And the other difference will be if you're getting it at one of those other places, it'll be you can get it starting on Tuesdays instead of on Thursdays. So you'll get it a couple of days earlier. So there you go.
All right, good. We briefly mentioned Hilo Omaha in either the limit version or the pot limit version. If you know the high version of pot limit Omaha, how hard is it to also pick up the Hilo version?
So pot limit Omaha Hilo is probably the most complex form of Omaha. You should probably understand pot limit Omaha High first. You should probably also understand the limit form of Omaha High Low as well.
Is that popular pot limit High Low, or is it mostly limit?
So as a cash game, so 10 years ago, pretty much all the Omaha in the country was predominantly limit Omaha High Low. Pot limit Omaha High is caught up. It's probably pretty close. Pot limit Omaha High Low, it's not spread too often as a cash game. Sometimes as part of a mixed game. For example, pot limit Omaha High, half a round of that, a round of that, and a round of pot limit Omaha High Low, or maybe a game where there's, you know, normal hold'em, PLO, and PLO 8. It's also popular online as a cash game, and it's also pretty popular as a tournament game, and it might be more popular as a tournament game than PLO High.
Hmm. When your book was coming out, American players had access to online gaming a lot more than we do today. And your recommendation was start out at, you know, 50 cent dollar, whatever the lowest limit is, get your feet wet, learn the difference between nut flushes and non-nut straights and all those kind of things, and then move on to into the casinos. Now, for most players, that option isn't available. How would you recommend a starting player begin today?
Well, so back when I wrote that, there was also no small stakes PLO games. It was all either, you know, the 5-5 game with, you know, $4,000 stacks, or online. So one of the things that's changed is now there's a lot of small stakes PLO games. You know, if you can play the 2-5 no limit hold'em level, you can play in these, you know, small stakes PLO games. So there are ways that people can learn to play the game, not necessarily cheaply, but relatively cheaply. And if you read, you know, my book first, it'll be a lot easier.
So are there, you mentioned that the Venetian, the Aria, has these games all the time. Have these spread out to the locals casinos? Like if you go into, I don't know, Sam's Town or Green Valley Ranch or something, I mean, will they have these games?
Not so much. Actually, even the game of the Venetians actually died down a bit because they actually changed the rules after, they struggled a little bit after I moved, you know, started the other game at Aria. You know, they're running every day, and all of a sudden the players said, you know, we want a straddle now. So now all of a sudden it's 1-2-5 to bring in the $10 straddle. Totally changed the game. There's a reason there's no straddle in that game when I started it. Now they put the straddle in, and then they raised the buy-ins, and now the game doesn't run anymore except during the series or sometimes during all the tournament series. But around town, I know at one point at Red Rock they were playing Big O, which is PLO 8 with 5 cards. They're playing that regularly. I think that's probably dead now. Every once in a while it'll pop up, but for most part it's pretty much just Aria.
Yep. My background in gambling was backgammon, and there a group of players playing was called a chouette. And generally when there was somebody good, they weren't all that welcome in your chouette. You wanted to have a chouette where there were bad players and not the good players. Now Jeff is describing in poker that he'd written this book. He was the leading authority any of these people know. And so he tells his people, come on over. We're going to play in a high variance game, and I'll be in it. And they go, great, we're going to play. So this is just totally against my backgammon kind of experience. So why is it in poker the really good players are welcome to come and clean up everybody else?
I think Omaha is a little unique, especially compared to No Limit Hold'em. Because in Hold'em, there's a big distance between the great players and the good players. In Omaha, it's a hand valuation driven game, so the difference between the great players and the good players is not that great. The big difference is between the good players and everybody else. So if you get a bunch of good players together, it's no big deal. The games start to get a little tough sometimes. But it's really getting the game going at all. It's just a game that people like to play with.
I think people want to play. You know, if it's a choice between not playing at all or, you know, playing with a good player in the game, I think most players want to play. So,
but I'm easy to get along with too. So I just like to hang out too. I'm not like out to, you know, steal everybody's money. It's just I like to hang out and play cards. It's one of my handicaps is I like playing with my friends. Which probably I've had since St. Louis. I like to, you know, we go on the road and play in these games, and I call my friend over, and I wonder why I did it, because my friends are actually good at poker. But I like playing with her. It's just fun.
Yeah.
So when you're playing equals, you can't really beat the rake, I would think.
Well, but not everybody in the game is going to be a great player, right? I mean,
yeah, there's also a lot more action in this game.
So it's easy to lose track, whether you win a couple thousand a day and you lose a couple thousand the next, and it's...
Well, some of us keep records. So.
Yes, we do. Is one of the problems with Omaha that the bad players go broke too quickly? Is that a fair assessment?
Definitely true in Parliament Omaha High-Low, which is one of the reasons that game doesn't run regularly, is because the bad players get broke really fast. In Omaha, Parliament Omaha High, it's less true. Although over the long run, actually most people are overplaying the bankrolls anyway, unfortunately. But I think a bad player has a better chance at Parliament Omaha High than in Hold'em.
Mm. So if somebody mastered your first book and maybe your first advanced pot limit Omaha book, would they be a favorite in the games that run today in Las Vegas?
I think you would be able to play in pretty much any live full ring Omaha game. And actually, these are the only books written on Live Full Ring Parliament Omaha written in the last 7 years. All the books that have come after it are written about six max Omaha. Online shorthand.
Oh,
Omaha.
Really? So there's just not much material out there.
Yeah, and then actually, the other thing. So these 1-2 blind with 1-2 with a $5 bring in. My first two books are still the only books written on those betting structures.
Huh.
Very good. That makes you the world authority on this.
Theoretically.
All right. So, Richard, we got about 45 seconds. Why don't you tell people how to get our podcast and
okay,
stuff?
First of all, we welcome your questions. You can send them to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or on our Facebook page at facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge. Or you can tweet your questions to me at RWM21. You can get the show delivered to you as you sleep from iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or my site, richardmunchkin.com. You can get archives of all the old episodes at bobdancer.com. Send us your questions.
All right. Thank you, Richard. We've been talking to Jeff Huang, author of Pot Limit Omaha, Big Play Strategy. Good night, everybody. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.